Welcome to the Appen Appen Podcast, the podcast for people working in the real world of IT. If you're this Appen, working on the help desk, a network engineer, an IT consultant, computer techie who wants to know more about servers, or even if you want to get a job in the IT field, this podcast is for you. Hi, I'm Al.
And I'm Andy.
And I'm Jerry.
And here we are again, and where are we up to now? This is number 53, isn't it?
Yep.
So, some interesting facts about the number 53. Which everyone has been eagerly awaiting since the last episode, which was actually number 52. Mm-hmm. Now, iodine, you remember iodine from your science classes in school?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's the atomic number 53.
All right.
Now, there's another very, very famous 53 on the side of a car.
Herbie,
number 53, yes. Bet you didn't think of that one. Mm-hmm. Now, if you have a 53 plate on your car, or you see one on your car, that came out in 2003, 2004 sort of era. And there's another 53, which is to do with computing. Can you think of anything?
DNS port?
That's right.
Of course.
There you go. if you want to dial Cuba and get some cigars, then 53 is where you start. in binary, it's 110101, and quite strangely, in hexadecimal, 53 is exactly the opposite, 35. So, I've been busy this week trying to learn all of that information, but what have you two been up to?
I've been up to quite a bit. Still doing any ship stuff, so my time is just doing a ship. It's all about segmentation of their subnets, which we can go into a bit further, and we want to talk about hyperconverge. One thing I was going to talk about quickly is about GNOME. As obviously I've probably heard in other podcasts, is that Ubuntu on the desktop have dropped Unity. So they've done quite a lot, haven't they? They've kind of dropped quite a bit of their workforce. Convergence, isn't it? Which basically, like, they wanted to do when they had a phone, which is like run their Unity software, which is their desktop OS, and they could have it on your phone and you could plug it into your PC, and then your PC would then become your phone kind of thing.
Yeah, I always really like that idea. I think there is a Samsung kind of effort, a bit like that. It looks quite good, actually. Looks quite like Ubuntu, actually, the desktop. But
yeah. I think they announced it, and then so Samsung announced this, and then they basically, Ubuntu kind of forced, basically they were stopping it kind of thing. So, yeah. So I've kind of, when I first got into Linux on my desktop, I tried Unity. But I always found it was quite, if you haven't got a very powerful machine, it was quite power hungry kind of thing. So, and I didn't really like the thing with the left hand side, with where you got, they had like different menus, like had all the applications on the left hand side kind of thing.
I think it ran on this thing called Compiz, which is, I think that's famous originally for the kind of wobbly windows.
Yeah.
So using your GPU to do all these desktop effects, which came a couple of years before Unity. Mm-hmm. But then they used that technology to actually make the Unity desktop work sort of together.
Yeah. I decided on my things before, when I decided what desktop was the thing, on basically XFCE, which is basically like a bit like Windows. The thing I like about the Windows is everything's very customizable, isn't it? That's what I like about it. And with XFCE, it's very light, it's very lightweight. So I stuck with that, and there's Ubuntu, and I can customize what I wanted in the like the task area, and it, at the top, I always have it so that the bar, like you have in Windows, is at the top. So that's like. So you have all your applications open on the top thing. So I like to be on an Xbox, when I'm on a Windows box, the bar's at the bottom. I've always been quite happy with my XFCE, because it's just fast. It's all configurable. I've got that thing Quake drop-down menu, so if you press the F12, it drops down, so you've got a terminal. But I thought I'd just try GNOME and see what it's like, because I thought, well, if I'm going to go back to it, I think I might as well try that and see how good. So I've, my laptop, which is just my Linux laptop, I'd basically put Ubuntu 16.04 GNOME on it. I didn't like the default way it's all set up, so I spent about an hour kind of configuring it the way I like it. And I think that Stuart Langridge and Popey both done a kind of blog post on how they configured it. So I configured it how I liked it. And they got like a dock on, like I say, I didn't like the thing on the dock on the window on the left-hand side. But what you can do with that is that you can have it so you have like your 8 main applications or whatever. And as you open up the applications up, it puts the icon on the left-hand side. And what you can do is you can right-click it and you can basically like stick to it, or you can pin it basically. Yeah, so like in Windows, you can pin your applications down the bottom. You can ping them on the left hand side. And what you can do, which I didn't know, is that if you press the Windows key and either 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever number the icon is on the left hand side, it will load the application up for you really quickly. So you can go Windows key or the super key 1, it will open up Chrome, whatever. Windows 2, if you've got the next one along, will be like LibreOffice. Does that make sense, kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah,
I didn't know you could do that. So
shortcut keys. Well, you can do that in Windows.
No, yeah, I didn't know Windows, you could do it. I didn't know you could do it with. That's how it worked in Unity.
Oh, okay.
All right. So I found the same thing, guys, in Ubuntu the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I did it by mistake because I was used to Windows, and I was on my Ubuntu laptop, and I did Windows 1, and then Chrome came up or Firefox or whatever it was. I went, oh, that works. Oh, great. Yeah.
So that's where. Because unless someone told you about it, like until I heard about it, so yeah. And another thing as well, so you can press the start button in GNOME and it brings up like this, I don't know what it's called, but it like brings up this search thing. So you can start typing an application and it will find it for you, or it'll put a word up or any documents you've got open, kind of thing. So
that's always the way I've, since, that sort of thing first came in, I think it was Windows. XP,
yeah.
Is it? I think. But I've always opened apps like that ever since you're able to.
Yeah.
Like even before in the early versions of Windows,
yeah.
You can still type in the name of the app. Press Windows key and R.
Yeah.
And type in the name of the app. I've always preferred that way of working. So.
Yeah.
And then when I've mostly been on the command line now, I tend to open a terminal and do it that way. So.
Yeah. Because I like how you just press it, you start typing it, application comes up, or you're looking for a document, and that document will come up as well, kind of thing. Because there's anything called GNOME Extensions, which is basically the extensions where you can add something to the application. Like you can add I like to have in the right-hand corner, like the system monitor, so you can see what's happening with your RAM and stuff. So there's like an extension you can do with that. Mm-hmm. The odd thing is that it has the time in the middle, as well, which is a bit interesting.
Has it still got that bar along the top? Because yeah. I've used stock GNOME 3. I haven't used Ubuntu GNOME.
Yeah.
And I've always found that bit along the top is a bit of a waste of space. Yeah. You can't sort of get rid of it where you could have that few pixels of extra room for your windows.
Yeah.
That's kind of, I've never really liked that, so...
But I think with now bigger screens, it doesn't really matter, does it, kind of thing?
No, but on a laptop screen, if you've got a fairly small laptop, it can still waste quite a lot of space.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and like, there's like, by default, with like a GNOME, you don't get like a minimised and a maximised Windows, but you can install an extension what puts that in. So that's not a problem.
I always got on quite well with the Cinnamon desktop. But I installed it on Ubuntu rather than, because it was originally with Mint, a Linux Mint, based on Ubuntu, but not Ubuntu, Linux Mint. So I had Ubuntu because I wanted to have basically so I could update it to new versions.
Yeah.
And then I put cinema on top of that, but it wasn't that well supported. So I always had these kind of niggling problems with it. And cinema was never had that quite finished feel to it, even though it's really nice.
Yeah. And oddly as well, when you've got applications open, it only just shows you that one application you've got open in the bar at the top kind of thing. But it's just getting used to it. I think it's just whatever. It's like, I use Windows 10 every day on my work laptop. I'm running it now, actually, on the moment. And it's just, you just get used to what you're used to, is it? Whatever you get used to.
It's true.
So I'm quite happy with it. I might, it's on my laptop, and I might put it on my desktop. I don't know. I'll just see how it goes, really. So,
yeah.
Because that's what I've been up to for the moment, mainly. What about you two guys?
Well, I got something which I told you last time, which was wrong. So
an erratum.
It's so you know those things at that dental office where they have all the tablets set up, and I said, "Oh, it's finally this is stored on the cloud." Well, it's not. It's not.
Right.
It was still stored locally. I was just told that, and I figured out it was stored locally. When I had a problem there, another problem there last week. So, because the app was, I had to take something down or unplug something. I can't remember what it was. And then they said, "Oh, the clinipads aren't working." And that's what they call them. It's a horrible name, but
clean.
And I said it should be because it's still connected to the internet. You know, you could still go on, say, Chrome on them. They still connect to the internet, but then the clinipad's message says cannot connect to server on 168.1.1. So I had a situation where the internet was on, but I had the server unplugged, and then the clinipads didn't work. And then I realized, so it's actually loading up the information from the exact database and storing it there. So that's one thing. So I was wrong on that. But I've since found that out. There's another... I've got some other questions about something else in a minute, but another very... Right, this is a kind of customer thing. And a customer phoned me up. It's a little business. And said that they couldn't print. The little printer that they used wouldn't work. So I said, "What's it exactly doing?" It says just says cannot print or no printer found or anything like that. So I told them to just double check everything was plugged in, know all the usual things. Because we know what printers are like, they're a right pain, aren't they? And so I said, just double check. I rarely like going out to fix a printer because you don't know what you're going to get. And half the time it's the printer's knackered and you can't fix it anyway. So I told them to check everything, check the cables, check this, check that. And he said, "Okay, we'll do that." And he phoned me back. "Yeah, everything's okay. It's still not working." "Right. I'll come in tomorrow." So I went in the next day. And I don't know why we bothered to tell them to check these things or whether they're too obvious to check. But I checked at the back of the computer and it wasn't plugged in. So I plugged it in and they had a backlog of about 20 prints. Right? Because somehow they think that pressing print once doesn't work. So if you press print again, it'll work. And then you repeatedly press print. And eventually it will work. So,
It will work eventually, but only when the IT guy comes to fix it.
Yeah, and then it started, throwing them. It's a little Samsung laser jet. So it was actually then spitting these papers out quite quickly, and then we're like, cancel, delete all jobs, cancel. So another thing I was thinking of bringing up was I was looking into this because I was watching some random YouTube video a couple of days ago, and it's all about network. What's the word that you use to topographies.
Yeah, topology, I think.
Yeah, topologies, that's it, okay. And I was just going to go through and see, probably put you on the spot a bit here, some of the advantages and disadvantages of different types of network. Because I see them now, they all, as far as I see, they all seem to be a star network nowadays. Is that sort of right in saying, with the router in the middle and then everything starred off from it? Because I remember when I was doing my computer HNC years ago, that we had, and I remember setting up bus networks, ring networks, a star network. So it was really, I was really thinking about why were they used? Because I don't think they're used that much nowadays, are they? Why would he use a bus network? And for a while, actually, I somehow thought a bus network and a star network was the same thing. But I think it's slightly different. But then I know a ring network is completely different. Now, are those from the days of, coax? No, the coax cables that we used to have and the BNC connectors.
And you had to have a terminal connector on each end, a terminal.
And a terminal.
No, a termination thing on the end of them.
That's right, yeah. It was like a resistor, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like some kind of resistor, and you had to put one on each. So now that was a bus network, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Would you say? So you'd have that on one end, and then you'd have a row of computers, say, and they'd all be in line. That must have been incredibly slow, though, mustn't it? It must have been.
Well, it was only 10 meg, wasn't it?
Was it only 10
base
now?
T, wasn't it? I think it's a star. I haven't really thought of Googling it. A star. I guess they call it a star network because obviously you had one like what you're talking about, a bus. So it's like a line, and then like all of them at the top. And obviously and you get the we get a ring, which was like you had to have a token. That's what they called token ring, had to speak. And a star is like where you have as in the middle of the star would be your switch, and then all your computers. And every printers and everything servers will be connected into that one switch.
Yeah, so that's the one that we all use now, isn't it? Really, if you say your router is the beginning of the star network.
Well, your switch is normally, and then your switch and the router is in the same place.
Well, the router contains a switch more often,
Because it comes up to what? Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, I was just going to say, a lot of the time, offices are using Wi-Fi now. You know, people bringing in laptops, and it's effectively a home Wi-Fi router.
Yeah.
A lot of the time.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that brings a point in there. Wi-Fi wise, would that be still classified as a star network, even though it's Wi-Fi? Because there's no actual physical cables involved.
You have this notion of the OSI model. I couldn't quote there's seven layers in it. Don't ask me what they are, but there's seven layers. I know it begins with like the physical, you know, the actual wiring, and ends with the application. So that's
physical, isn't it?
Layer one is the physical, and layer seven is the application. So layer one in this case, in the case of Wi-Fi, there's no wires. It's radio. So.
Yeah.
There isn't really a notion of a star network. So I think this star hub and ring is down to the physical layer, which is layer one. So I think that I don't think it's applicable in terms of Wi-Fi because you've got the link layer and the transport layer, I think, which are the next two layers. Is that right, Al?
It's got the physical layer, then data layer, which is two, network layer, layer three, transport, session, presentation, application.
Right. So, data is either TCP or IP. I can't remember which. So TCP IP is kind of two of those or three of those. And that runs on top of the physical thing. So TCP IP runs over Wi-Fi, but it's just radio waves at the end of the day.
It's like a shared medium. It's a shared medium, isn't it? Because no one's got control. Because like with the token ring, only the person with the token can speak. In with a switch, obviously not with a hub, but a switch, it says who can talk or whatever, because it doesn't it? So
Well, often, I mean, this hypothetical office with everyone's got laptops. The laptops will be connecting to an access point and or multiple access points. And then those access points will have a physical connection to a switch, probably. And then that switch will, be plugged into the router, and that's how you get out to the internet. So that's a sort of hypothetical modern office, trendy office like the one I work in.
But if you see things like, say a bus or a ring, then the data, say in a cable, then the data physically flows. Is it right in saying it flows through each computer to the destination that it gets to?
I think that's right. In those old style networks, you had the T pieces and...
Yeah, so it physically flows through it. And so if you look at a Wi-Fi network now, then I know there's kind of no connection medium, but the data flow, if you think of airwaves as being flowing, the data flows from the computer. It doesn't flow through the other computers, does it?
No. Although you can get peer-to-peer Wi-Fi networks. Or like
ad hoc.
They call them ad hoc networks, yeah.
Oh, of course, yeah.
So it does exist.
And the other thing, of course, the channels that they have, the Wi-Fi frequencies, but they'll all be on the same frequency, won't they? I suppose.
Yeah.
But again, as I was saying before, it's a frequency, so it's a shared medium, so only anyone can speak, and there's no kind of like control saying, if you can speak, I can speak, it's all just... Okay.
Everyone's in, yeah.
Actually, going back to OSI models, it's actually quite a good segue to about what I was talking about, segmentation. So we talk about that, and then we can get, then can Jay can tell us on. So you basically got that layer 7 thing, and I can never remember which way it is, but there's quite a lot of like acronyms in it. And the funny thing I like is that I got taught on my Cisco courses is, please do not throw away sausage pizza, or please do not throw sausage pizza away. Yeah. It basically gives you those layers, the OSI model from bottom to top. So you basically got physical layer, which is the which is actually talking about the actual talking on the network, which is the bits, which the bits are transmitted, which is the it's like the MAC address. So you think about the MAC address is level one, is the physical data, is the link, that data link is where you, is your IP. Well, sorry, it's not like it's gone out of my head. It's the isn't it? It's the ones and zeros. And so that's like your layer two, is like you've got two PCs talking on the same network and now talking in layer two. Layer three is the packets. So that's like if you've got
how the ones and zeros are kind of packaged together, I suppose.
Yeah. And then layer three is normally like it's the routing as well. So you've got like, it's like if you've got, we'll talk about this in a minute, but you've got like you've got 192.168.0/24 and you've got 192.168.1/24. That's layer three.
Is that where layer three switches?
Yes.
So is that in the model?
Yeah.
So that's network.
Yes.
So that makes sense because we're talking about IP addresses and things at that level.
So then you've got layer four, which is transport, which is like the TCP UDP.
Okay, so that's the packets.
Yeah.
That's what we think of as packets and TCP headers and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got layer five. We've got session, which is like where you start the session up between the two PCs talking. Then you've got the presentation, is where the data gets presented or gets encrypted and between the two, or the coding between the two talking. And then you get layer seven, which is the application layer, which is like the FTP, Internet Explorer, that kind of thing, isn't it?
HTTP,
yeah. So,
cool.
Yes, that's a quick overview.
I saw another name as well, which is a tree network.
Have you heard of that?
Yeah, well, this is something I've only heard of, yeah. A tree network. I think it's probably very relative to what we do now. I can put a link in the thing, but if you look it up, you can see it's basically, it looks like a load of star networks all connected together.
Well, it's kind of what I was saying about the access points plugged into a switch.
Yeah.
Maybe that switch is plugged into a core switch. So if you think about it, it looks like branches of a tree or roots of a tree.
Yeah, so you had three switches and then there was, you know, 10 computers off each switch.
Yeah.
That's like a tree, basically.
So going back to what I was saying about this, what I've been doing is that this project I've been working on. So you basically got a subnet segmentation. So on this ship, we've got a network, which is, so they've got a network. There's like a, not actually, but it's like a one I made up. So you get, so you've got 172.30.4/22 address at the moment. So all the PCs, servers are all on one subnet. Okay, so the subnet mask is 255.255.252, not the normal 254 that you'd normally have. Sorry, 255.0. Yeah. So this means that you can have 1,022 hosts in that one subnet. Okay, so in this subnet, you can have an IP address from 172.30.4.0 to 172.30.7.254, if that makes sense.
Is it not 172.30.4.1?
Yeah, that's the first IP address you can use. So the zero is always the it's a subnet ID, and then the 254 or the 255 is the subnet broadcast address.
Yeah.
So.
So just to sort of go, clarify the 1,022, it's 1,024, which is 2 to the power of 12, I think.
Okay.
Minus the 2 at either end, so the 255 and the 0.
Yeah. So it's 1,024 addresses you could have, but one is always for the subnet ID, and the last one is the broadcast, so that if you say, like, on there and you want to find another IP address, you say who's got this IP address, that's what you use to broadcast to everyone in that domain. In that IP subnet. So at the moment, that subnet is currently, it's not split up as a so, but it's, people have been putting things in kind of a logical order. So anything which is 172.30.4.1 to 172.30.4.1 to 172.30.4.254 has got a static IP address of a, so it's like a server or a printer or something on there. Yeah, so I've got to say, yeah, so you see in a minute. So in this subnet between 172.30.4.0 to the 172.30.254.5, is that it's kind of like got four little subnets inside it, kind of thing. So that's what I'm saying. So 172.30.4.1 to 172.30.4.254 is the servers. Then 172.30.5.1 to 172.30.6.254 is DHCP scope.
So you've got 512 IP addresses that you can use in that DHCP range.
Yeah.
And 256 or whatever in the server range.
Yeah.
So it's, if you think about it, it's like having four Class Cs.
Yeah.
Which is what we're used to, I suppose, in home, you got our home networks or whatever, is a Class C or /24.
Yeah. So. And the last Class C, so Class C is like a /24. And then Yeah, and then you've got the last one, which is 172.30.6.1 to 172.30.7.254, is currently spare. But there was a couple of devices on there. So what I'm doing is that they're basically segmenting that up, because what they want to do is they'd have to have the clients cannot be on the same subnet as the PC, sorry, as the servers. And then there's some servers which aren't allowed to be on the same servers as the normal servers, and the same as, and they're not allowed to be on the same network, pardon me, as the DHCP, as where the clients are. Mm-hmm. So, and that's basically so that people can't, you can basically put some firewall rules in. Because at the moment, that's just a, well, at the moment, it's just a flat layer 2 network. So if they wanted to go out to the internet, your default gateway 172.30.7.254, that would be the default gateway, did, and that's where you then, if they say you want to talk to something which isn't on a network like 8.8.8.8.8, like the Google DNS, it would know that it'd have to go out the 172.30.7.254 address, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're doing is we're basically segmentation that subnet up, so it's in its own little subnets. So we were doing 172.30.4.0/24, so not 22 anymore, so that those items, those servers inside that /24 are going to be on their own little network. Does that make sense? So the subnet,
yeah.
All we need to change on those devices are the subnet mask and the default gateway. Because obviously, because the subnet mask with the old subnet, sorry, so the IP, the default gateway is outside of that subnet is. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because .7.1 is not in that same subnet,
so
you'd have your own. You'd have a new subnet. Default gateway, which is 172.30.4.254. That makes sense.
Yeah. So in these subnets, if you split devices or computers up into subnets, what it means is if they're in a different subnet to another device, they need a router to talk between them.
Yeah.
So a router is just something that has an address in one subnet and address in the other subnet, and it knows how to route the packets between those two subnets.
Yeah.
So at this point, You've got this massive subnet of 1,022 addresses,
yeah,
and you're splitting it up into four
physical networks.
Yeah, four physical networks that need a router to talk between each of those subnets.
Yeah,
yeah.
And we're doing that so that we can apply firewall rules, so that we can stop certain traffic going between the networks. So each of those little networks are basically VLANs, basically.
Hmm.
So that we've got one which is 172.30.4.0/24, which gives us 254 hosts. Is that right? 253 or 254?
254, because it's, yeah, 256 minus the two at each end.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Other side, yes, yeah. And then we're going to have another subnet which is 172.30.5.0/24, which basically gives us the... So we can put the PCI servers in those. And then 172.30.6.0/23, which basically gives us 510 hosts for the DHCP clients, the clients.
Okay.
So that's just 224 put together to give us 510.
Okay.
Hosts.
So you lose a few addresses because of the bits at each end,
yes,
but not enough enough to that you can live with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why we're doing it. And luckily, because we're not changing the servers addresses, we haven't got to do anything about DNS or anything. All we need to go on those is change the IP addresses, the trains in the subnet mask and the default gateway. And obviously, the DHCP, all we do is we just update the DHCP server so that everyone gets new addresses in the new subnet range.
Yeah. So. Also, just to explain a little bit, the default gateway is going to be the router that I was talking about earlier. So it's, if one of those hosts needs to know how to get to another network, it goes to the default gateway. And that's, from the point of view of the host, the default gateway is the router.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So that's quite good. So we were talking to like a layer 2 network of the whole... When we had the old one, which was /22, it's like everyone was on the same layer 2 network because everyone was, it wasn't going outside the router to get out. So, but if you were going out onto the web, it'd be a layer 3 packet to go out. But now we're having like three little layer 2 networks and talk between the two. If you've got a client which needs to talk to the server, it'll be a layer 3 transaction kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. My only question about this is the 172.30. is actually not a non-routable IP address, is it? Isn't that 172.16 dot something dot something? That's your, so 172.30 is actually a public IP address somewhere.
I don't think it is. Let's have a look.
Okay.
Could you've got what they call it? There's like a special name for it, isn't it?
Non-routable.
Yeah, there's another norm. Yeah, so by pirate non-routable addresses. So RFC 3300. I haven't got time to read that. Let's just do the Wikipedia page. Okay, so you basically get so you get the 192 range which we talked about. So you've got the 192.168, which is a /16.
Yeah.
Which is goes from 192.168.0, you can do all the way up to 192.168 to thing. You've got the 10.0.0.0, which is /8.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got a 172.16 /12. So you can have that's from 172.16.0.0 to 172.331.255.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm still in the
you're still in the legal kind of space. So this, just to explain to the listener, is you want your private host and your private network to have private addresses or addresses that don't exist on the internet. Because we can put a link to there's a Wikipedia page that kind of summarizes it, but if your address in your private network is an address that could exist on the public internet, that could cause problems with your router or whatever. So you want those to be in these sort of private IP blocks. With IPv4, this all pertains to IPv4, which could be changing sometime soon, but maybe not. You know, people keep finding ways to extend the life of IPv4.
Was it like someone gave back a big chunk of the internet back? Like
I heard that on Security Now. I can't remember what kind of size it was, but I think
It was a /8. So.
Was it? Okay, yeah. Which is 16.8 million addresses.
Yeah.
And I think Amazon grabbed half of those.
Yeah.
They auctioned them off. Yeah, it was at MIT, wasn't it? They had these because they'd had them since the beginning of the internet, basically. And they auctioned them off. Made a good, a cool, you know, a few hundreds of millions of dollars out of it.
Yeah, because the reason you use a private is that obviously you can't, when you're at home or whatever at work, you don't want to have a public, you haven't got enough IP addresses. Like when I was at college, at City College Norwich, every PC in the building had a public IP address, a proper public IP address.
Yeah. I used to work at this company and it had 128.1 /16. And that's a public IP block. And I think it was because it was Philips. Philips owned this IP block and they did a project for them. And they gave them this public IP block.
Yeah.
So they might have made their millions by selling that off by now. So,
yeah, I worked for a hospital as well, which had like they actually owned the IP addressing, but they were using it internally, but it wasn't actually, it was still behind a NAT router, so it wasn't actually being routable, cause like from the internet.
I think that's how, well, this company were doing, actually my first IT job. They had this private IP space. It's mad.
Yeah, so there's a good little calculator. If you Google IP subnet calculator, it you can put the subnets in and it will tell you what the if it's a class A, B, or C, and it'll tell you what the bits are and stuff and what you're usable. Another thing which is I've used is a thing called BitCricket, which is what was showing me, which is like the same sort of thing but on your computer, and it also shows you the different subnets in there as well, so you can put it. I'll see if I can share this so you can see it. Can you see this? So it shows up, so you can put. So you can see that it tells you what the subnets are. So you can tell you what it. So you put your IP address in. What I've got here, you can change the subnet mask. Kind of thing. So you can change it to 22. It will show you what the addresses are. 24.
Can you make it 2020? Cricket.
So. But you have to. I couldn't find it. You just Googled it, BitCricket, but there's no proper download anymore. It seems to disappear, but I didn't seem to find it on the internet. So have a look at it.
Someone should open source it.
Yeah, it's quite a good day because it's kind of, you can do quite a lot on there. It's quite a good little thing to kind of show you where I wanted to show the domain, the network split up, kind of thing.
I've always got confused with subnet mask names and IP ranges that come with it, and no, because you've got 255.255.0, then you've got .0.0, and that one you've got there. So there's loads of different ones, isn't there?
Yeah,
and
well, basically,
have different ranges of them.
What you've got is that you've got how many hosts in the network. So if you look at what I was doing at the moment, so if you have a look at my show notes, you can see that here you've got. This network here is what the network was set up in the first place. So at the moment, they've got 172.30.4 and the subnet mask is set to 255.255.255.252.0. You can have 122 computers in that network. So say like you were looking after a PC, I don't know, somewhere like this dental practice you've got, and they had a 255.255.255.0, which is a /24 subnet, is they had that you can have up to 254 computers in that network. So if we select that, you can have maximum host 254. But let's say though that they had 254 computers and they went and bought 10 more PCs. Obviously, you can't assign that, you can't assign those people 10 more IPs, so you'd have to change the subnet to something else. So you could set it to a /23, so you'd have to go around and reconfigure everyone to 255.255.254.0 address as a subnet mask. That mean that you could have in that subnet then 510 computers.
So we're dropping that subnet mask by one number.
Yeah,
that doubles the amount you can have.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, nearly. You don't. If it goes smaller, you basically gain more. But if you go like a 24, you can get 254. But if you go down one, or go to /25, you get 126 addresses. But again, you have to. The lower you get is that you more of the subnet ID and the subnet and the broadcast address. You have to always have those, the last IP and the first IP and the last IP is always reserved for those things. You can't use those. Right. That's just how it works.
It's basically because it's binary. It's either halving or doubling it either time, each time. Yeah.
I can see the advantage of halving, to double the amount available. Well, what's the advantage of making it a /25 and halving the amount available?
Well, let's say like I've got with my problem I've got at my customer site, You want to subnet it down, so you want to have like little areas, but in that little areas, you might only want, you only got four or five devices in it. So let's say you've got like a little small office. Well, let's say you've got like a, you're a big company and you get given, you're using 172.30. Let's say you're using one for, so basically, let's say in America, let's say you've got your company owned by America, and they're using their subnets for, let's say, in America, all their offices are using 172.30.1 to 10, 172.30.1.0 to 172.30.10 is their kind of what they're using. And they say, well, you can have at yours, you can have 137.10 for you in the UK, if that makes sense. So you in America, because the American company, they can say, right, you can have .0/24, okay? And everyone, but you might have 10, you might have like three or four sites, okay? And in the UK, and you've only got that 172.10. And if you use /24, that means you can only have one site with 254 hosts. So what you can do is you can split that 10 down into less. So you could say like /27. Okay. And you can see from 172.10. So if you do, sorry, /27, which is 255.255.255.224, you could have a maximum host of 30. So you could have your site in London can have 172.30.10. So they could use 172.30.10.1 to 172.30.10.30 can have those 30 machines. So you might only have 10 P's at each site. And then on the your office in Manchester could have 172.30.32. And that means you can use 172.30.10.33 to 172.10.62. Do you see? And they can only have 10. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, so you split it. So we're talking countries here. So yeah, so you split it. So one country has an, you know, one range.
Yeah.
Now you can have more sub offices in the one office.
Yeah.
I suppose in practice you might have a block of public IP addresses. So say you've got a block, you might. You wouldn't get it these days, but if you had a class C, which is /24 of public IP addresses, and you're a massive company, and then you want to split those down, you say, you know, to each of your sites, you can have, you know, say a /31, which is, you know, a tiny amount of IPs, but it's more than one. So, so it's a way of splitting down that public IP block.
Yeah.
Because you would have been assigned a public IP block, maybe a /30 or whatever.
Yeah. But sometimes it's a bit of a waste. If you've got like 10 computers on the site, which has got 100, which has got a /24 address, you're basically wasting, aren't you, 240 addresses, which you could be using somewhere else if you wanted.
But then, if most of your, you know, unless you're in a sort of internet hosting provider or something, you're going to have private IPs, aren't you, in your offices?
Yeah.
So then you can have a 10 dot, you can have a /8, you know, in your office, and there's no problem with that, you know.
No. But again, it's like if you've got little branch offices, you don't really want to waste it. If you've got your little scopes kind of thing, and that's why DHCP is such a thing. Because going back, does that all make sense, then, Andy?
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, I mean it's one of those. It's on the big, broad, wide scheme of things, isn't it? But yeah, I can see how it gets split. Yeah. But it does pose the question, you know, what if you had five sub offices in the UK, and each of those sub offices had 100 computers on them?
You'd have to use NAT then. You use a private IP range, and then
okay,
you know, you use VPNs or whatever between sites.
Yeah.
which have a public IP address.
Or you just make it so you've got a /25 instead kind of thing, so that you've got... but you don't have to, you'd have to request more. But have a look, Andy, because it's quite interesting. Is it took me a bit of time to get it, when I've got my head in it, but because I'm using subnets day in, day out, and I'm not a great teacher, but look at how it works, because it's all about subnets.
Is it mathematical?
Yes, it's all about binary. Because try and Google it or YouTube it. There must be a way of it's quite hard how it works. Is because the way it works is that you see it says 255.255.255. It's quite easy. So if you do 255.255.0, if you put that into binary,
it's a 32-bit number split down into four lots of 8 bits. So 255 is 111111 eight times, and then 111 again, then 111, and then if you've got zero, then that's just zero, all zeros.
Yeah.
So if you do 255.
So what that means is that those zeros can be any, the number of the IP address can be anything from 0 to 255.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
So that's in binary. Yeah. So 255.255.255.0 is 1118.11, isn't it? How it works is that is that when you're at layer two, it knows that it's quite obvious, it's really for listeners, but what it does
we'll
is
have,
it,
we have
what,
to do some copying, cutting and pasting of this app you've got open here.
Yeah,
maybe
what you've got is that when IP when a host is trying to work out, is this host I'm talking to on the same subnet or not, it will basically put the IP address it's talking to against this address.
So if you look there, Andy, you've got 24 ones there, so that's where the /24 comes from.
Yeah.
And if you've got a /25, you've got 25 ones. So that last octet will have one and then seven zeros after it. So those in binary, you can have any of those zeros, which would be 128 addresses. Yeah. Do you see what I mean?
Right, so the first three blocks... So this is how it identifies itself. The first three blocks will always be the same, but the last block then it changes depending on what the individual IP address is.
Yeah. So if you put that as 252, it then obviously puts one. Yeah.
And so then say you had an IP address of .10, then that would have a.
So.
Yeah.
Like
I can see it. Yeah, the people can't see this, but we can.
No. But it's great radio, this. Yeah. But, we're gonna have to do some graphics.
I'll find a decent YouTube video what explains it, but
that's probably easier. Yeah,
yeah. How it works is that if you're on the same subnet, so if you wanted to go to say, I'm on a default gateway of 19, so I'm on subnet 192.168.1. And I wanted to speak to something on 192.168.2. It matches. It's really hard to explain without having a picture, because it basically it matches it up. It goes right. It basically says right 192.192. Does that match? If it matches, it'll be a zero. It's really. I'll find a YouTube video what explains it, and it's really hard to explain it over an audio podcast. Yeah. But it matches it, and then it basically if it matches it. It knows that it's on the same subnet, so it won't go. But if it doesn't match it, it basically knows it's not on the same subnet, and it sends the information out to default gateway.
So if you're using VLANs, which we've talked about in the past, each VLAN is a different subnet, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So that then, so you can't communicate over two different VLANs unless
there's a router in between them.
Unless your router that allows you to, and you have to set that up. Yeah. Yeah.
And this is what I'm doing on my kind of on the ship kind of thing. So
okay.
Yes, this is why at the moment this is my 172.4.0/22. we'll be splitting it into these the three IP addresses, three IP address ranges. There's a 172.30.4.0/24, 172.30.5.0/24, and then 172.30.6/23, which is the bigger range for the clients. So yeah, that's quite, and what I had to do is trying to work out making sure that there's no one on that. I had to work out what IP address on that network, so I know what I had to change, because the customer didn't know officially what was on that network. So I had to use a couple of IP scan tools to kind of scan the network to find that out. So we've got like a list of like, we know what we're going to be basically dialing into and changing. So yeah, I'll try and find a YouTube video what explains that subnetting quite good. So
that'd be good to watch that. But I mean, I understand that like 100,000% more than I did before.
I've been trying to get my head around this my entire IT career, so this has actually helped a bit more.
Yeah. I can't wait until we reach episode 255.
Well, don't you wait until you work her about IP6, and that'll then make your head hurt even more.
Oh god. IP6 is a big long, looks worse than binary.
Yeah.
So I used to do my addresses in binary. My invoices in binary. I used to number them sequentially in binary.
Oh, I remember that. That's a good idea. That,
yeah. And I actually made it past 255. So that's quite.
Did anyone ever phone you up and then you said to them, "Oh, what's the invoice number?"
No, I had a nightmare keeping track of it actually. but I did have a couple of clients that appreciated that they were in binary. So.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, I've got my head around it, I use it every day. It's just that, I have no, I can never remember what a 252 is. Is it a SAS? Mm. Or someone goes, oh, it's a SAS 30 network. I can remember what the subnet mask is meant to be. Kind of.
Yeah.
It's a lot of yours though. Is that like memory? Just remembering what it is rather than,
yeah.
You're not thinking about it or figuring it out every 2 seconds. You just remember.
No, because normally you do this subnetting. You normally do this sub-segmentation once for the company, and then you never do it again because all you're just basically adding in. So let's say you have your network. I said my network is 172.30.16, normally quite a customer one, so 16/0, and everyone's got like a SAS24 address. Then you're always going. You always use the next one along kind of thing. So you're always using 172.16, and the next site will be 17.18.19. You never have to work it out because it's like a one thing kind of thing. It's only when you have to use a new customer who's obviously splitting up these things.
You only have to add one.
Okay, so Jerry, what have you been up to since the last podcast?
Well, you know what? We're almost at the hour. And I haven't, don't tell anyone, but I haven't really done much preparation for this podcast. So I'm going to leave that to the next episode when I've written it up properly. So, okay. But yeah, more Kubernetes stuff, TLDR, more Kubernetes stuff. And I'll know even more by the next time of the next podcast. Yeah. And I'll be able to regale everyone with that. So let's get on to the email. We had an email this week, didn't we?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Should I read it?
Yeah,
right.
Go ahead.
I'll go for it. Right. So he says, I have to read this before I start. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, right, here we go. So he says, "Hi guys, glad to see you back and didn't pod fade. After listening to episode 52, I thought I would chime in on the REST API talk. At work, we have some software that we can interact with via the REST API. One tool that I found very useful during testing is a Chrome add-on called Postman. Postman. And he's given a link, so we'll have to put that in the notes. It lets you see the interaction of the calls you are making to the API to sort out any bugs. Plus, I use a Windows app called Fiddler. And there's a link to that as well. One last note I have to chime in on is the talk of customers doing something off the wall that involves something you are responsible for. I work for a copier dealer and we had one very large client that kept placing calls requesting information on devices that they were not working for printing. They couldn't log in. Well, apparently they decided to implement some print management software without consulting with us. One, the company that installed the software on the device were not authorized to do so. They should have contacted us first. And two, they didn't work because they didn't have the right configuration. The copiers needed some firmware and other items installed that was that were a cost to the customer. In all, it all turned out okay. But it did cost them quite a bit of money, and there was a lot of tension during the period of it not working. Anyway, thanks for the show, and look forward to hearing more. Well, that last bit then relates to the ones that I had, didn't they? We got the clinipads for the tablets, only to realise that they didn't have any Wi-Fi where they wanted to use it for. You know, so that's a typical another example of customers just, you know, doing things themselves, you know, without consulting us. But going back to the first part of that email about the REST API, that was something you were talking about, isn't it? So what did you think about those plugins and things like that, or have you tried them? Or
I haven't tried them yet. Well, I think this email only came up a couple of days ago and haven't had a chance to try them yet.
Friday it came on. Literally, yeah. Like before we were going to record the podcast.
Yeah. So I will try them out, definitely, and get back to you on the next podcast along with my Kubernetes talk.
Yeah, I was thinking it just basically is like a proxy server in your browser, so you can basically see what's being requested. I think API on the end, that you're sending you're basically going to a website, aren't you? Like an XML website, and you're pasting or you're pulling stuff out of it, aren't you?
So you
can see the information going backwards and forwards, kind of thing. So
yeah. There was something called Charles, I think, which the at my old place, the mobile guys were using to see what was going, you know, to the app and from the app. I'll definitely have a look at that, and we'll comment on it next time.
Cool. Great, that sounds good. We haven't had any other emails in, have we? Is that the only one we've had?
No, that's it. We have a couple of things to mention. Probably, you know, something fairly current, which hopefully will still be current by the time the podcast comes out, but Lara Croft, Tomb Raider, the original Tomb Raider, available in the web browser.
Yes.
So
I thought you were going to say she wrote in.
Lara Croft wrote in, yeah. first email we've had from an actual computer game character. But yeah.
Oh, yeah, I found a couple of more Sys Happen podcasts to the account. One's called Sys Happen Today, which is quite good. Which is a more of a Windows kind of podcast, which is a chap talking about, it's quite good, about Azure and Office 365. It's quite in detail kind of thing. And this one, more for you, Jerry, is called Iron Sys Admin. Check it out. It's basically a little more Linuxy. It's done by a Red Hat guy. So he does he's a Sys Admin guy in there. So.
Sounds interesting. I think you messaged me about this, and I was saying my podcast backlog of actual episodes that I've got to listen to is now in the 60s.
Yeah.
So
that was 50 on Friday.
I know, it's gone up. But yeah, I will try and get around to that. Maybe I'll start listening to more at work or something. But
yeah, well, I've kind of got I didn't realise, but my podcast app has got like playlists you can do, so I don't know if it automatically done it, but when a podcast comes down, it goes into like a downloader folder, and then you can basically put it into like different playlists. So I've got one called technical, one called outdoor podcast, and one called a better life. So like I basically started listening to other podcasts rather than technical stuff, so like I make sure that all my technical stuff goes in my things, like the Security Now, etc., and I only make sure I listen to the technical stuff either when I'm driving or when I'm working, kind of thing.
Makes sense.
So And I kind of basically put it in technical, and you can basically order them the way you want to listen to them. And also, sometimes I want to listen to stuff like, if I want to listen to something, I want to definitely concentrate. I make sure that I'm driving in the car because it's got more of my full attention. Well, of course, that's not really how it should work. But if I'm things like working in the off at home and I'm like having the background noise, I like to listen to things like Geek News Now and stuff, which I, like, you haven't got to have your 100% concentration on it. You can just have it in the background kind of thing.
Yeah, because some of these podcasts are quite rambly and, you know, it's not like a news podcast or something like that. And where it's quite structured. So I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. So what podcast app are you using?
Public podcast Replica or something. It's called Replica or something. It's like the one I've used from the start, kind of thing.
Okay.
But I've got like my outdoor podcast, like about going outdoors and stuff, like about people, like athletes and stuff, like endurance athletes and stuff. And then like Better Life is like things like life coaches and stuff, which I like to listen to like when I'm running or like to, need to get a bit of encouragement or kind of thing. So
motivation. Yeah.
Yes, kind of thing. So
nice.
Yeah. So so that's really cool. Okay. I think that's all I've got to say, kind of thing. I did notice the other day that Popey had posted a thing where you could actually pay Theme Hospital on Linux or Windows as well. You can, if you've got the data files, like from the thing, there's like a kind of engine you can download, which I've rewritten, which is now open source. You can run Theme Hospital from the days, kind of thing.
Nice.
I'll put a link in the show notes to that as well. So,
I think people should write into our email address, which is mail@admin.co.uk, and tell us how far behind they are on theirs. Podcast listening.
Yeah. Because how many admin podcasts behind. Have you got to listen to?
I'm actually, for once, in. A top of my podcast list. So in my other one, my outdoor life, my the good better life is I've got loads of them, but I don't mind about them because they're like they're things that you can have, you can listen whenever. But I haven't actually got anything in my queue for my technical stuff because I like to keep because I've been doing quite a journey. Like yesterday, I had to, like a 4-hour journey. I literally had to go into central London because I'm on call this weekend. The hard drive failed. So I'd drive all the way to my office, pick up a hard drive, that's an hour to my office, and an hour into central London, into, not Docklands, is it Isle of Dogs I had to go to? Yep. Literally, go out of the car, got into my thing, got signed into security, went up to the rack, pulled a disc out, put the disc back in, phoned the customer, said, yeah, I changed it. Goes, oh, yeah, I can see it rebuilding. Take the old disc, put it in my thing. A tip. So they basically got alert coming through that disk failed. It's for a thing called a free path storage solution. And he said, oh, it's this disk. But on the ticket, it doesn't give us what the disk part number was. And he goes, oh, yeah, it's a 2 terabyte drive. And I went, okay. Luckily, there's only 3 disks what can go in the system. And I took all 3 disks with me because I thought, I'm not driving back to the office, it's the wrong one. And it was the wrong one. It was a 450 gig 2.5, not a 3.5 disc, 2 terabytes. Like I said, like, through. Haven't got to drive all the way back to Norwich, London, to get back to our office to get the thing and go all the way back to London. So,
would have been a serious waste of time, but on the plus side, you would have got to listen to a lot more podcasts.
Yeah. So yes, I did manage to listen to 4 hours in the car in the podcast, listening to my thing.
Nice.
Okay. So, we'll speak to you all soon, guys and girls. Bye for now.
Next time. Bye now.
See you next time. Bye.